What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of No Reserves Radio. If my voice is a little off, I'm sorry. I'm a little bit sick and out of town. It's been miserable. Life sucks. What's up, Alex?
What's going on, guys? Yeah, apparently, like, Angela's not feeling all that great. But we're here. We're here. Although we missed last week, shit happens. But this time it wasn't entirely on me. My internet, my Wi-Fi provider decided to just, like, go off the rails and decided that I shouldn't have Wi-Fi. So that's great. We have shit to make up for it, right? Like, how are we making this up to the people, Angelo? Tell us.
I don't think we are. I think we're just moving forward.
Shit.
No.
Shit. We're not making this up to the people. I thought we were, because, like, there's another person in here. But I guess, like,
there
that's
is?
Not making it up to the people. Wait, there is not? Did he just not. Leave, like, to cook chicken again?
He totally just left to go check on the chickens, yeah.
What's going on, Corey?
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, good friend of the show, Corey. Former Jags worker.
Former arena football scout.
arena football scout. So, like, it's a very similar career path to Kurt Warner. But it's scout instead of player. So, but he goes from arena football to the Jags. He has a gig with the Jags. And since then, he has been playing fantasy football. That's just what you need to know. Like, he breaks down the prospect
in fantasy football to Alex. So,
and unlike me, he actually builds those teams up into something successful. So, you know, kudos to you.
But who do you lose to this year, Corey?
I lost to Alex this year.
The two-time champion, Alex. Back-to-back, baby. That's two rings. Two rings. Soon enough, we'll be five.
Not if my rule changes have anything to do with it.
There's rule changes?
Yeah, he wants to make a sort of a coup. Apparently, like, he wants to just, yeah, he wants to throw down my team. Since he can't on the actual field, he's going to throw it by the laws.
Yeah, I'm going to break up the monopolies.
Yeah, he wants to.
How do you plan on doing that with rules and regulations? Enlighten me, because I haven't paid attention.
Okay, well, we can get into it here. We can get into it here if you want. I want to do away with the salary cap. In our league.
Oh!
See? He's
do you
want to
hear the reasoning? You want to hear the reasoning?
Yes, I do.
So I think that it inhibits activity more than it adds anything to the league. And so over the last 3 years, I think we've experienced declining levels of activity in our league. And I think that a part of that is us being behind on updating the sheet. And recruiting new members has really been an issue. Recruiting good new members for orphans.
Yeah, it's hard to. Yeah, that would be extremely hard if you just got a team and you're like, okay, now, by the way, you have to figure out where you are in a cap situation, where you are in the future, and figure out how to make. That's a lot of stuff to take in and to, you know, make an assessment on when you're coming.
Yeah,
in.
And even when some teams have, like, $30 million in dead cap from a dumb trade that the previous owner did. Like, it gets to be a tough sell, I think. But we don't have to go into that too deep here. But that's a little bit of an update onto the league.
I'm all in favor of breaking up Alex's super teams.
We'll see what the Lord Commander in charge says about that. Okay?
The Lord Commander, is that you?
The Lord Commander.
Yeah, the Lord Commander in charge, yeah. Yeah. That's like the nickname that some people give me.
Alex will veto any bill that comes to his office that involves abolishing.
Many people have called me that. Many people. Okay, but the reason that we brought Corey in wasn't for the politics of it, was because he actually knows a thing or two about prospects.
I
don't think I should say that when someone was just so clearly wrong about the prospect and the great prospect that is Ladd McConkey. But outside of that, he tends to be very right on things.
Just wait, sorry. Because there's,
you know what sucks?
There's two TCU receivers I like this year, so just wait, Alex.
Do you know what sucks, Corey?
Six.
I mixed it, because I have a bunch of different Dynasty Leagues, I mixed it up, and my rankings had Brian Thomas Jr. in the spot I was drafting, and I decided to go Ladd McConkey and just shock Alex in that spot. And I'm not sure I made the right pick, I'm not going to lie. I think they're about the same as far as where people view them.
In general consensus, I think people would rather Brian Thomas Jr., but there's certainly people out there who like Ladd a lot. So you're in good shape either way.
Yeah.
Whether or not you missed out on a few spots of value, it's not a huge deal.
Remember, Brian Thomas Jr. is a Jets player. Angelo?
Okay. Remember, he's the only Jags receiver worth owning right now.
Yes.
Wrong.
Yes. And, like, Jags receivers tend to be better than any other receiver ever in existence. Because the Jags really are, like, the best team in the league. Okay, moving on, though.
You don't got to go that far.
No? Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I just need to know.
Bears in 3 years after they sign him and regret it.
Okay. So, for some news, since we've been away for the show for, like, a week, we missed out on the whole Matthew Stafford drama. So, like, apparently he was having tea or some shit with, like, Tom Brady. And, like, there was this big rumor that he was going to move to the Raiders. And there was this big rumor that the Giants wanted him. So it turns around that he just signs back with the Rams. So he's back. Like, none of that really mattered to them quite that much. So now that leaves the Raiders and the Giants still looking for a running back.
Still looking for a running back?
For a QB.
Okay.
Well, they are also looking for running backs, I'm sure. But the name that has been floating around is Aaron Rodgers. And I think it's just me, but if he goes to any of those two teams, I don't think it's going to be to the Raiders team. Because playing under, like, Tom Brady might actually give him some sort of stroke. So I don't think he's going there. I think he's rather taking the revenge tour and going to the other New York team and actually proving to do something or try to do something. And that also means that the Giants are getting Davante Adams. So that's breaking news for you all. See you in a week.
So what do you think the, like, coming to Jesus moment for Matthew Stafford was? Do you think it was the phone call with the Browns, the Giants, or the Raiders?
I think it was looking at the stats of how many sacks they allowed this past year. And he was like, okay, so I'm going to go back to the Rams. Bye. That's how it went.
That's just sad.
I don't even know why you would want to leave the Rams at this point if you're him. If the money's right.
They're probably, like, going to get rid of Kupp, and he probably doesn't want to go through, like, a mini rebuild. But even then, even if there is, like, a mini retooling of the Rams, it's still a vastly better situation than the Giants or the Browns.
I think the big holdup that he had, or at least the reported, because now he signed a new deal that I believe it's just a one-year deal or an extension for just 1 year, because he already had a year on his deal. I think the big thing was the money and the longevity of the deal. I probably didn't like any of the other offers. I think the money was close enough to what was reported that he wanted. And he ended up going back for just, like, maybe one less trip with Sean McVay. Because if you think about it, and I was listening to this argument, and I think I agree with it. If you think about it, I think they were closer to actually making it to the Super Bowl. Like, if you look at the hypotheticals, and, like, if my grandma, this is always what I say. This is what a famous coach, a Portuguese coach, once said. If my grandma had wheels, she would be a Mack truck. But if you look at the games that he had versus the Eagles, like, that game could have flipped the Rams' way fairly easy if, like, the snow wasn't, like, a factor in the end of the game. I really think it could have flipped the other way. Then you have the matchup versus the Commanders, which I think, like, it would have gone similar to how the Eagles matchup went. Because it's just a more experienced team. facing up versus like a team that basically should have been caught a long way back and finally got caught. And then you look at the matchup versus the Chiefs. Maybe it's not the annihilation that it was, but I think it would have gone similar enough to the point in which, like, I think the Rams' defensive line would have been able to handle the Chiefs' offensive line for most of it, like the Eagles did. But I think, like, in a sense, they were sort of close enough to making it to the Super Bowl and having an actual run. And that weighs on you, like, going from that certainty to the uncertainty.
I would agree with you. They were just so close to winning.
What? So... Alex Eagles hate and holds no bounds. You are now saying that the Rams were close to the Eagles and that the Rams pass rush without Aaron Donald is equivalent to the Eagles. Oh my God.
The roster isn't equivalent to the Eagles, but they were just right there too. Their defensive line is great. Their offensive line is good. They've got a good wide receiver. They've got a good running back. Well, they have two right now. Cup's probably going to go.
Yeah, Cup's gone.
I think construction-wise and how the team played, I think it would have been a similar enough result.
I just put the Eagles at a separate tier than the Rams.
Like, anyone who doesn't put the Eagles as the best roster right now is going to be stupid.
No, but do you see what you just signed off on, Corey? You just signed off on, oh, yeah, the Rams, you know, if a few things could have gone their way, they could have beat the... Oh, no!
That's true. That's objectively true. My...
No.
I'm just sitting in the corner laughing that I made another person agree with me that maybe the Eagles, like, what they did wasn't so surprising. But, okay.
God.
Bye. Had the Rams gone to the Super Bowl, I think the outcome would have been the same. And I think he's having a meltdown right now.
He's having a meltdown, and his internet isn't too great, so he's gone in and out, just losing his mind.
It's hotel Wi-Fi, unfortunately.
It's all good.
No. So yeah, we all agree with that take. Then.
No, we don't.
We all agree with that take then. Hey, Angela, this is a democracy. It's a 2-1. We win. Okay?
And you know you're in the wrong when Alex and I are on the same side.
Oh,
see?
My God.
Like, you simply can't argue with that logic. I'm sorry.
This is unbelievable.
He's just distraught at this point. Like, he has lost all the fight to the rest of the episode. So now I can say whatever I want. It's like I can say that Marvin Harrison Jr. just had a much better season than Nevers.
Oh my
God. He just won't be even able to defend that. Even though I'm clearly wrong. Like, he just doesn't even have the will in him.
I don't get why people think the ridiculous things you say are not ridiculous. I just don't understand. I just don't get
it. I present them wisely. Like...
I'm sorry, Alex was on the Jared Verse hype train from day one, you know, so I just want to...
Definitely. Not the Laiatu Latu, or whatever that guy's name was, the Indianapolis Colts edge rusher. That's definitely not the guy that I liked it. Yeah, definitely totally. Not the guy that I liked.
Totally.
Verse was always my guy.
Yeah, totally.
Day one. Find me records of the contrary, please.
I believe there was a podcast about this time last year that we might have spoken about the song.
False.
I swear to God, by the end of the year, Alex is going to convince everyone that listens to this that the Eagles didn't even win the Super Bowl last year.
I don't think they did, though.
Oh, like,
I remember, like, watching part of that game, and then I think, like, if I'm not mistaken, the Chiefs were about to mount a comeback. No. But before the half, the Chiefs were starting to mount a comeback. Like, they had the ball, and I believe they managed to get points in there, because then I turned the TV off. I turned on the halftime show, and that's basically it. So I think they actually, like, didn't win it. That's just me. Okay, the other piece of news, it's about your team, Angelo. Like, apparently, T. Higgins isn't going anywhere. Like, your team is holding him ransom right now.
Pretty much, yeah.
They're holding him ransom. Like, they are not even chasing you, deal. What's up with the Bengals? Like, why are you just, like, so piss poor at this point?
Because we're cheapskates.
Okay. So you're just some cheap fucks.
That's the truth.
Like, no one
gets
to
lie to
right
you
now.
I'm surprised we paid Joe Burrow. Like for real. We are that levels of cheap.
Why did you guys let Lou Anarumo go? Do you know?
Because they're cheap.
That can't be right. That can't be right.
No, you let him go because, like, he, like, despite of what might have actually happened, you know, like, why your defense went from, like, pretty solid to, like, absolute dog shit water. Like, he was still the guy in charge, so they scapegoated him, basically.
Yeah.
They are still, like, the whole argument that we have about the Bengals, it's like, Marvin Lewis got them to the playoffs once in 20 years, and he was never let go. What do you think the guy that got him to the Super Bowl is gonna get? Like, he's gonna get, like, he's gonna die coaching the Bengals. That's just it. He's gonna die at, like, 80 years old, and he's still gonna be coaching the Bengals. That's, like, that's the eternal gratitude.
He's gonna be the mayor of Cincinnati, I mean, by the end of this.
Yeah,
with a 500
mayor
record.
And coach. Mayor and coach and owner of the Bengals.
To play devil's advocate, like, it's not like Zach Taylor was necessarily known as a defensive guru. So, but at the same time, that defense was absolutely atrocious. It was beyond atrocious. It was painful to watch, and Alex couldn't just, like, let well enough die, and he had to wait until, like, the final week of the season until they were actually mathematically eliminated to say that they were eliminated.
So some would say that I was right in holding up hope until the very end. Because there was hope until the very end.
Oh, right? There wasn't. There was never any hope.
Hey, what? You were in the run until the very end.
We were never in the run. That was false hope. It was over. It was over when we lost to the Ravens twice because we gave up 45 points twice.
That's still, like, the funniest shit ever. That he had to true for, like, every game. If you don't score 50, you're gonna lose.
Just, how it was? Just, like,
it's just how it was. Oh, but yeah, so you guys are keeping T. Higgins. So
we gave
all
up
40
to the fucking Russell Wilson-led Steelers.
Hey, that's better than giving 40 to the Justin Fields-led Steelers. God knows that could never happen.
It's probably going to happen next year if the Bengals defense stays the same.
Yeah, I doubt anyone can actually, like, give up 40 points to Justin Fields.
Okay. Like, sure. Okay.
Okay, so you guys are keeping T. Higgins. All of the fan fiction of him going to the Texans and him going to the Chiefs and him going to, like,
bullshit.
That's,
I think,
fan fiction. That's what
I
it is.
I think the Bengals are in this weird situation where, like, they don't want to pay T. Higgins and they don't want to pay Ja'Marr Chase, but they have so much pressure from Joe Burrow to maintain them that they're just like, we got to keep this going as long as possible. But I know at the end of the day, they're trading or cutting or something. Well, not cutting, but losing one in free agency. They're losing one of those two. You cannot convince me both those two are going to be in Cincinnati come next year. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. This time next year, one of them will be gone.
You just keep franchise tagging the Higgins until it reaches like 50 million.
Can't That's franchise just... tag two people.
You're type. You should. I think you should have given the deal, or you should at least give a deal somewhat soon to Ja'Marr Chase. But that's just me.
Or Chiefs.
I'm just.
Dude.
I guess that's just.
There's a reason happens. I bought a Joe Burrow jersey and not a Ja'Marr Chase jersey. I'm just saying.
That's the guy that is going to stay with the team. The other guy you're just not sure about.
We paid him. We showed proof of concept. We have not shown proof of concept with Ja'Marr or T, apparently.
Okay, so those are the big pieces of news that I've seen floating around right now. I'm not sure if any of you have any other piece of news to have, since my last week and a half has been a bit chaotic. I'm not sure if, like, any of you have seen any other piece of news that should be commented.
Too. You got something, Corey?
No, I don't think I've.
Was there something with Vrabel?
I don't think I could recall anything.
I could have swore I saw something with Vrabel at one point, but I don't remember what exactly it said.
I mean, it was mostly combine stuff and draft news. Like Abdul Carter might be getting surgery, and that might impact him at number one. That might be one. Abdul Carter.
Oh. Huh.
That's like, and if you read the notes, Angelo, that's the guy that there's rumors that the Titans might want.
Don't read notes. I'm not a notes taker.
Okay. So let's jump straight into that. So one bit of news that was curious to me, and that's why I included it in there. So these were two separate moments. So like always in the combine, you have the testing, and then you have like the whole bunch of the GMs and the team execs talking amongst each other and with the media. And some tidbits come from that.
If Abdul Carter is a pass rusher, I do have to say, if the Titans really aren't going a quarterback here, they're more in on Will Levis than even fucking I am. Like,
it's bold of you to assume that it's going to be Will Levis when you didn't fucking end the season starting.
I think that they would probably be a spot for Aaron Rodgers.
It's going to be the same thing. It's going to be the same thing. He's going to go into camp. He's going to look good for a few weeks. They're going to start him, and then we go from
there. He's going to tear the Achilles again. Is that it?
That would be funny.
Okay. So, like, there were rumors that they are in an Abdul Carter, and those came mostly from them allowing Errol Landry look for a trade somewhere. So that's their big star pass rusher right now. And that comes after they, if I'm not mistaken, they had the interviews with Abdul Carter and all that. And then they say that Landry can actually go find a team. So that leads me to believe, plus it was also coming up from the fact that they have held trade talks with other teams for the number one overall pick, which basically tells me they are out of the QB scenario mostly. And that they're probably looking elsewhere. So this could be, they look like a team that is a bit in flow right now. Like, they could stay put, take a guy like Carter, or even a Travis Hunter, because they have also interviewed them. With Travis Hunter, they seem to look at him as a cornerback. That's what the GM said about Travis Hunter, that he could start right away for the team as a cornerback. Other GMs, like, if I'm not mistaken, the Browns GM, came out and said that he could play both sides of the football.
That is something the Browns would say.
Yeah. Travis Hunter hasn't, like, necessarily put that to rest. He still seems to want to play both sides of the ball. Like, if you're the Tennessee Titans and you can move down and you're not really sold on any of these QBs, which side would you go? Would you go with the guy that could play both sides of the ball but is... I think he's a good corner. I don't think he's a great wide receiver. I think he's a solid wide receiver, great corner, or good corner. Would you go with that sort of player that has the upside to play both sides of the ball and he's also an elite athlete? Or would you go with a guy that is pretty much at this point the consensus 101, the consensus best rusher, but has that sort of health injury that I think is sort of cleared because... The thing was, he either tested or right now and in the pro day, or he would have to have the surgery. And I think he's getting away from the surgery and actually testing at this pro day. So which side would you go? Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter?
I'd abort. I'd trade down. I don't think there's a good decision to be made here. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you finish.
I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, that you should necessarily be considering a cornerback at your number one overall pick. And if we're being completely honest with ourselves, if Travis Hunter really plays both sides of the ball, here's what's going to happen. He's going to be the number one or number two corner on defense, and he's going to have a specific package, kind of like the 49ers did with Deebo Samuel when they ran him in the backfield, the Deebo package, and he is going to be played only a certain amount of snaps a game. I'm not sure that's worth a 101. And I'm not sure there's a player I would select here that I would be comfortable taking one on. I would abort. I would trade down. And quite honestly, I think it's not only a good decision just based on the talent that's out there, but it's a good decision for the Titans overall because they have so many holes to fill that just one player, I'm not sure, is just going to catapult them right back into the playoffs. That's just me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. As long as they don't go quarterback, I think that they'll be fine. I don't think that their roster is set up to really build a quarterback into something that will help them win. And as you guys might know, I'm a situation over talent type of guy when it comes to quarterback. And so I don't think that they're going to set up anyone for success. So out of the two, Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter, in a vacuum, I would go with an edge over any quarterback, over any wide receiver. Just, I think that they're that much more valuable. I think I agree with Angelo in that I think that Hunter's going to be a package player on offense and a full-time starting corner. I still think that that's really valuable to have a really good wide receiver three who comes in 10 to 15 snaps a game and can really make a difference for you. So I think I would lean towards Hunter. He's one of the players that I'm trying not to overthink and nitpick when what he did in college was just so impressive.
And he had a line about that as well. Like, he was questioned a lot about, like, no one else has ever done this. Like, so what are you going to do if like, no one else has ever done this? And, like, his response was, like, pretty self-explanatory. Like, I'm not unlike anyone that has ever come out. And, like, that's cocky to a point. But at this point, it's also, like, quite true. Like, I don't have the knowledge to make a ranking of, like, the best college players or the most impactful college players ever, but I would imagine that Travis Hunter is somewhere in the top of that ranking, like inside of the top maybe 10, maybe 5, in terms of like, because I, in my years of watching the NFL, which has been for the like past decade, I don't remember a player that has come out this way, like with such a big impact on both sides of the football. And with like legit talks, it's not something like, you see some players that play on both sides, but it's like you can clearly see that it's better on one side and like very inferior on the other. And he's just like winning based off the athleticism. Like, there's legit NFL people out there that are saying that he could legit be a full-time wide receiver. So it's not something out of the blue here for him. Although I think he's a much better coordinator than he is a wide receiver. And I think that's his best path was successful, and I agree with you guys that it should be with package on offense. Like, I don't know, playing maybe 20 snaps on offense at best per game, and being a full-time corner. I think that's his path for success in the league. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he actually manages to carve out a career and like a good path for him as a wide receiver, and even probably making a bit more money. But that's something to look at the future. So, yeah, I would also probably go with him as the 101 over Abdul Carter, but I can also see, like, Abdul Carter being the type of guy that makes you regret that situation. So that'd be, and, like, pass rusher is usually, like, when you're building the team, it starts from the trenches. So that's, like, the big up on the Abdul Carter guy is just going with the trenches. And for my knowledge, even with the injury, that it seems like he maybe escaped something massive there. I think that's probably worth taking a chance on. But I would try to move down, but it's a tricky situation when you move down, of course.
I don't think it'll end up being a good thing if a team tries to stick Hunter on one side of the ball. I think he'll end up being too much of a diva, that he'll end up being distracting if you pigeonhole him into just a corner or just a wide receiver. And so I think with a player like that, you have to keep them happy. You have to feed them a little bit. And so you got to put them in on offense, at least in some package, right? And then if you're a wide receiver, or if you think that he's a wide receiver, you got to put him on defense for some amount of plays as a nickel or anything like that. I don't see a scenario where you keep him on one side of the ball.
He does scream diva, not gonna lie. Like, the dude, like, his whole personality, he just screams diva.
Could you imagine him wanting to play both sides of the ball and the coach being like, no, you're my corner, stop talking, how that'll go? That would go so poorly.
It's like AB going up with the Bucks, like shirt off. Bye, guys. I'm off. Trade me. That's basically how I see that.
Dion would come out and say, you need to let him play. You need to send him to a team who will or something like that. And it would just end up being chaos.
Dion is immediately on that.
If Travis Hunter doesn't go number one, how far do you think he falls? Because I've heard Deion Sanders say some very, very negative things about the Browns. And
I think his floor is 5 in Jacksonville.
You think his floor is 5 in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Okay.
And his floor might even be higher than that, but
maybe.
Was looking up at the actual order. So it goes Tennessee, Cleveland, Giants, New England, Jacksonville. I don't know. I guess it sort of depends on how the Giants go in terms of, like...
You think they're going to sign up for another year of Daniel Jones?
No. But, there's available... I could see them going with the Aaron Rodgers, rather, fortunately. So, if they think that's their solution at the QB position... I could see them taking the shot at Travis Hunter, kind of that a lot of people will. But I could see Tennessee going for Abdul Carter, Cleveland taking Cam Ward, and then the Giants being stuck on a hard place and being like, okay, we don't believe on anyone else in this class. Let's take the athlete. Let's take the player that is actually good for the team. And then they go Ashton Janty, right? It's just like the Saquon Barkley argument.
God, they're not going to do this again.
It's like, okay, Barkley worked out well for the Eagles. Let's draft him again and make sure he doesn't leave. I could see the rationale being like that with the Giants, which is sort of scary. Okay, but since we're on guys from Colorado, and I think we can also talk about his teammates, since we're also talking about massive divas.
Jimmy Horn Jr.?
Is it just me that thinks that Shedeur Sanders is definitely busting?
Definitely busting?
Yeah. I don't think
you can say that with any certainty.
Yeah.
I think that there's an element of risk with him, but
that's aside
from his personality.
I think it's part of it is the personality, part of it is the adversity that he's going to face. Because you're looking at a kid that was also, that was always coached by his dad. Everywhere he went, he had some sort of success. He, like, Florida, Colorado, he had success in both colleges. He elevated the program, as he most eloquently said. But I feel like that's his standard for himself, and that's his standard for wherever he goes. And he put it blatantly, like, everywhere he went, he turned the programs around, so why couldn't he go to an NFL team and do the same? And I don't know if it's just, like, bravado of him to go in the podium and say that, or if he actually believes it, because if he actually believes it and he wants to go into the locker room and makes that sort of change by himself, I don't see how that goes well for him. I don't think he has the skill set for that. I think he's a solid QB. I think he's a solid prospect, but I don't think he's worthy of a top 10 pick if the QB class wasn't so shit. And I think he's throwing some teams off by how, at least that's the reports that came out after the combine. So I could definitely see a scenario in which, like, if he doesn't go to Vegas, like, it goes bad for him. Like, I feel like it's one of those scenarios in which, like, you either go up until Las Vegas or you're about to fall down massively in the draft board.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to go great for him in terms of, like, his psyche. Like, going down as far as, like, I don't know, if you're falling outside of the first round even, which I don't think it will happen. But I don't think it's also out of the equation. Like, how do you mentally prepare for that? Like, you've always been a kid that, like, as I said, turned everything around and has had success everywhere. And then you get passed by every single team in the NFL once. I don't think he's mentally prepared for that. And if he goes to a situation like a Las Vegas, like a, I don't know, a Giants, like a Cleveland, I don't think he has the skill set to overcome the deficit that he has on those teams. So that's why I sort of think like he's doomed to fail. Maybe I'm being like overly dramatic with this. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But I just feel like wherever he goes, I don't see this going well for him. What's my definition of failure?
Yes.
I think it's him having a...
No.
I think it's not exactly Zach Wilson, but it's a step above that. Like, you don't need to be, like, as bad as Zach Wilson. Like
Matt Jones. Bad of a career, right?
Yeah, I think probably.
Matt Jones' career is a failure, and anything above Andy Dalton is a success. If you ask me what my...
I think even maybe a slight step below Mac Jones. I think a slight step below Mac Jones, because Mac Jones had success in that first year, like a modicum amount of success. I think he got screwed eventually by what happened around him. But I think like when the pieces were in place, I think he did decently well. I would put a step below that. I think he's around the Mac Jones range, but not as much success year one. I think it's a rockier first year. And then just a complete decline, because like shit just hits the fan still for him. So I think that's the sort of scenario that I'm afraid for him, and that I could definitely see happen. And that's why I think like the kid is sort of destined to fail at this point.
I have some conflicting opinions on him. Like, I like the fact that he came from Jackson State, right? And then he went to a D1 school and played really well, and his stats were great. He did not have offensive line help. And I like his general accuracy, ability to create when there's nothing. But the thing that I keep coming back to that I really did not like was the game where he threw his offensive line under the bus. And it's like, that's true. They did not play well. But if you pull that in the NFL, you're going to lose the locker room immediately. And you will never recover that. And I have a hard time like reconciling those two things along with his lack of arm strength. And, you know, he plays good out of structure, but he doesn't have the best mobility in general. So I think he's like a player 25 through 40 type player. And I don't know if that's low on him. I've heard that's even high on him. So,
yeah.
I guess I have conflicting opinions on him. But if he goes to Las Vegas in the second round, I think I would be really happy with that for him. I think that would be a good spot.
Why?
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 So in my dream scenario, it would be GT in the first for them. They have an adequate offensive line. They have two good tight ends. He has a relationship with Tom Brady already, who can actually mentor him. Pete Carroll's a great coach. He can handle a lot of personalities as long as he doesn't get sucked into one of them, like he did Russell Wilson. And Chip Kelly is an offensive coordinator. Jacoby Myers at wide receiver. Nothing spectacular, but pretty good. And I just think it's a good spot for him. They can run the ball really well with GT if they get it. They'll have enough on defense to do something. And I think you can have some amount of success there. But they got to have a running game if they're going to do that. If they just pick him in the first, maybe they
Here's
get like...
Here's my issue with it, though.
Go ahead.
My issue with it is I don't think they would be able to go Chanty and then Shadur. And I don't necessarily think it's... because he won't be available in the second. I think it's going to be like, as I said, he looks to be like a very prideful individual. And I'm not entirely certain if like you're skipping on him once in the first round and then coming back to him and drafting him in the second round. I'm not certain if that's going to go well for him in terms of like his relationship with the team immediately. Like I think...
Insane. If he Are goes you to the Vegas, that he doesn't go in the first round that no one should draft him? Like,
No. I'm not saying
I disagree because we saw it with the Heisman. Like, Hunter got all of the accolades, right? He was the number one on that team as a corner and as a wide receiver. So, like, Shadur's already been overlooked to some degree. So I don't think that we've seen anything to indicate that he can't handle not being in the spotlight when he literally was the second biggest, or even third if you count Deion, the second or third biggest draw for Colorado. So I don't agree with that, but it makes sense what you're saying.
I think it's at the college level. Deion was his fodder. Travis Hunter was like, he played both sides of the football. Like, I think he understood why the spotlight was on Travis more than him. I'm not certain if he's going to understand why the Las Vegas Raiders sitting at six went with a running back instead of him and didn't even move up to draft it. And like, if you move up, you probably need to move up quite a bit. And they didn't even move up to draft him. They let them like run down all the way into the second and then pick them up. Like, in that scenario, I don't think that's going to sit well for him, because like, it's one thing if it's your teammate and if it's like your father and whatnot, it's a whole different thing. But it's like a guy that you have no actual connection to. And like, especially with a team that you want to trust in, with a QB that, as you said, could be his mentor for the future. I feel like he would think that this is a stab in the back, not drafting him immediately at six, and like him not the team not like putting any sort of amount of decent value on him as a player. So, and like, maybe like at the start it even goes okay, but I feel like as the adversity starts to come, like, we've already seen him like throw teammates under the bus and whatnot, like, what's not to say that like at the first adversity, if this scenario happens, he just like doesn't give up on the team and immediately is out of there at the first chance that he got.
Wouldn't the fact that he doesn't have a like previous repertoire with the Raiders be a bigger selling point of why they wouldn't move up to get him, because they're not as emotionally attached to him? And it could be viewed more as a business decision?
I don't know, because I feel like the moment they draft Shadur Sanders, and with the head coach that they have currently in place, Pete Carroll, who's not like the springest of the chickens right now, like, he isn't young by any sort of definition. I think the moment they draft Shadur Sanders, it's a ticking time bomb until like they are attached to the Deion Sanders name. Like, it's going to be seen as Pete Carroll has an expiring clock on him. It's going to be like one season, two seasons, and like at smallest of the, or maybe he doesn't even need to have a slip up. It's going to just be like, his time has come. Like, he's off the organization and they're going with a new coach, a younger coach, and they get Deion in. So I'm not entirely certain if they won't have any sort of like that emotional attachment, because as you said, like, he has the connections with Brady. Brady's going to be his mentor. And you can't convince me that, like, the moment that they draft him, they give the okay on him as at six, that he isn't, like, the guy to the future. They're going to build around him, and building around him probably means getting Deion Sanders in the door, like, when he has a bit more experience under his belt. So I think, like, the emotional connection is there for them if they do draft him. So I don't necessarily give that they are not emotionally connected to him right now. Like, the plan has been set, if that's what you're going with. But maybe I'm just, like, going the conspiracy theory route.
I think it's a little bit of a conspiracy theory, but it doesn't sound super far-fetched. Like, say he does okay, but doesn't light the world on fire, and in two seasons, he still looks that same way. Maybe they still want to make it work with him. And then they bring his father in. Like, I could see that happening. It's a little conspiratorial, but not too far-fetched.
Plus, they were, like, connected to Deion this year. But, like, as I said before with Deion, like, the guy has, what, two seasons of coaching under his belt at, like, big level, like, with Florida and Colorado. Like, he has 2 years of coaching under his belt. Having that guy sort of made the jump to the NFL immediately, I don't think it would have gone great. And I think like they realized that it wasn't going to go off great, because he does seem to be the sort of coach that needs the players to buy into the philosophy and be like the player's coach, a bit like Carroll when he came into the NFL, although Pete Carroll had a bit more experience under his belt. But it's the sort of coach that you need the players, and you need the young players especially, to buy into the culture. And I don't think they were in a position to do that at that point. So he needs to get more experience under his belt. Yeah, I think it's why they went with a guy that is like damn near 80 years old. It's like they're going to give Pete Carroll a couple of years to like rebuild this team and get some of the pieces needed to get this team in actual shape. And then they're going to get Dion in after he has a few more seasons under his belt at the college level. So I don't know. Even if he goes to the Vegas, where he probably has a longer leash at this point, because he's probably going to get 2 years that a top 10 pick would get if he goes inside of the top 10. And they go with and they don't go with Janty, and they go with Shadur at six. He probably has the 2 years. Then he probably gets even a bit more because of his connections and who he's the son to. So it's probably the team in which he's going to get the bigger leash. It's with the Las Vegas Raiders. But still, I don't know how it's gonna go with them there. I don't know. I'm just not sold on the guy. I don't like his demeanor. I don't like his like the bits of tape that I've seen from him. I don't necessarily like. It's something that I need to look at a bit more, but I'm not super eager about him right now.
Yeah, I think it all depends on where and when in the draft that he goes, because I'm with you that I don't think that he's a top 10 pick. I don't think that Cam Ward is either, but
this hey, doesn't this feel like the Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett sort of draft?
It does. Except for Willis was like 25 and Pickett was 25 or 26. Yeah. Ward and Shadur are both 22. They're really successful. They played a lot of football for 22.
Yeah.
So I value them higher, but it does feel a little bit more like the Willis year than last year or anything.
Yeah. Because remember that draft, like there were a bunch of mock drafts coming out, and they had like Kenny Pickett going to Carolina super early, Malik Willis going inside of the top three and whatnot. And like those were the reigning mock drafts at the time. Mm-hmm. And what we ended up learning was that Kenny Pickett was the only first-round QB taken, and he was like in the 25th pick, if I'm not mistaken, by the Steelers. And I think, like, funny enough, there could be something here similar enough where we see some risers that we weren't expecting. I don't think the first QB is going to go, like, in the 25th range, but I could definitely see a scenario in which, like, the first QB is Cam Ward, then he goes, like, at the bottom of the top 10, and then like you don't see another like first round QB until like maybe the 31st, 32nd pick, or maybe a team goes up and drafts him, and it's maybe Shadur or someone else. I could see a scenario like that. I think we're gonna get some sort of surprises in which it's not gonna be so QB heavy as we've been thinking, as we've been seeing in some of the mock drafts as well.
Yeah, I just don't think that Ward is going to leave the top 10. I think that there's a chance that Shadur might, but I don't see a scenario where Ward gets past the Browns, who need a quarterback, the Giants, who need a quarterback, the Raiders, who need Saints a quarterback, the Jets, who need a quarterback, the Saints, who need a quarterback. So, especially once if we get into the rest of this class, like it's just not a good class at the top to where you're going to be passing up a surefire all-pro for a quarterback, right? Like, I just don't think that this is the class to pick any player over a quarterback like Cam Ward.
Speaking of other prospects, and we've been at this for a while now, a bit more than I thought we were. But we mentioned Janty. Janty has been like the guy for quite a bit now. But there were some reports coming out of the combine that some teams have Marion Hampton ahead of him. You mentioned Amaria Hampton before we started recording. Do you think this holds any sort of water? Can you even make a case for Amaria Hampton over Janti, or is it like, is it just nonsense from you?
I don't see a case where you can make Hampton as RB1 in this class. I think he's closer to RB5 than he is RB1, but I think that's more of a testament to how good this class is as a whole, that a solid second round prospect like Amarian Hampton is potentially as far down as RB5. I think I have him as 4 right now, but I think that's more of a statement for how many good running backs there are. And I think that we'll have at least 2 in the first round. Yeah, I think that we're going to have 2 in the first round. I think that GNT for sure is going to be in the first round. And then my top 5 is I have Caleb Johnson at RB2 and Travion Henderson at 3, Omarion at 4, and Quinshon Judkins at 5. And I think all of those go in the first 2 rounds.
I could see it because it feels like this past offseason, there was like a flip that switched and teams became a bit more enamored to the idea of actually giving up either money or actual assets for a running back. And I think it sort of was proven right when you see like how much success Henry had with the Ravens, how much success Saquon had with the Eagles, and how much that transformed the team. I think teams will be a bit more open to drafting the running backs earlier this year, and not just like going for with the Raiders route, for example, or even the Giants route, in which you're just going with a later prospect or like a retread guy or something like that. They're actually going to invest in the position somewhat. So I could see that, especially in a class that is so close. Now, what we could see also is a scenario in which like the guys are just so close that it's going to be like a game of cat and mouse in which like the teams are just going to be pushing it and pushing it and pushing it until someone actually makes the decision of going for that second running back. And then everyone, and then there's going to be a massive run of running backs in which like another 3 or 4 go. After that, I could see.
I don't think that philosophically teams make decisions like that because the top 5 running backs are all so different that I think that you're going to find teams falling in love with one over the other and thinking that they need this one versus, well, they're both good. So, you know, I think that's a lot more of things that we do for fantasy where we think that, you know, Travion Henderson and Amarian Hampton are both going to be successful. So it doesn't really matter them fitting our scheme or fitting our personnel that I think that teams are going to fall in love with one of these guys like Caleb Johnson, who runs much differently than Quinshon Judkins.
Yeah, and that's the part that I'm missing right now in my process is that I've actually haven't really looked at a whole lot of tape from these guys. So yeah, like that definitely plays a part in here, and it could be what separates these guys on just like the idea that the guys were similar prospects. I could see that, but yeah, of course, as you said, and that's a good point that like teams are just gonna go for the sort of guy that they usually want. So that's why we're having you here, because neither of us has actually looked at a whole lot of tape on these guys yet. I'm the tape guy. You're the numbers guy. That's just it. But the tape guy hasn't had time to look at the tape yet, so it's gonna be a bit longer.
Freaking loser.
Okay, so Corey, we've talked a bit about the running backs. We've talked a bit about the QBs. We talked about a bit about the best players in here. Can you name us some of the guys that you think have rose and have fallen after the combine? Like some guys that you are actually quite high on that could have rose into like maybe the first round range, and some guys that have fallen after the combine.
So Matthew Golden definitely rose after the combine, right? Like he ran a 4.29, and that wasn't something that we specifically saw on tape. We didn't see 4.2 speed on tape. And so it's something that you got to go back and look and see, like, damn, is he really this fast? He was already looking pretty good. I just guess I didn't see the complete picture that the, kind of the speed gave me a lot more to look for and understand. So he was definitely a winner from the combine.
He ran 4.3, right?
Isaiah Bond, his teammate, not a winner from the combine because he built his reputation on speed. And you saw that from some of his comments. And he didn't look as fast as I thought that he should on tape, and that showed up in the 40. And so it's something that I'm definitely going to knock him for. And you don't knock every player for their testing numbers, but when you see someone play a little bit slower than you think that he should, and then it shows up in the combine, you're going to trust your eyes and the numbers.
For context, the quote that he had was, Isaiah Bond, that is, I anticipate running a 4.2 or possibly 4.1. The outcome was running a 4.4. So when you talk a big game and you don't back it up, that's what you get. Matthew Golden ran a 4.3, if I'm not mistaken, right?
He ran a 4.29.
So both guys from Texas. I believe like Xavier Worthy, he ran a 4.21, so none of them really broke it, but Matthew Golden was close enough.
I think other winners from the combine were Luther Burden. He weighed in and measured a little bit bigger than I thought that he would, and he still ran a 4.41, which is pretty impressive for his size.
Wow. Very good production at Missouri, too.
Yeah, I think that he'll be a guy that you like, Angelo.
Yes. Looking at this, yes, this is very much a guy that I like.
You didn't see a lot of players really impress you at the combine from the wide receiver position. But you saw a lot of players do what you thought that they would. Like Iowa State has two wide receivers who I really like a lot, who didn't impress, but they didn't do anything wrong either. So Jalen Knoll, who's one of my favorites in this class, he ran a 4.39, which was pretty impressive, actually. And Jaden Higgins ran a 4.47 at 6'4", which is pretty great. 6'4", 214 pounds. So those are some other winners from the combine. And then, oh gosh, who in the running back class did good?
The Ohio State running backs?
Yeah, the Ohio State running backs were real winners.
I've read a few names that did better than expected, and Dylan Sampson and Bashful Tutten from Virginia Tech. I'm not sure if you're into any of those guys, but I've heard that they did a bit better than anticipated. In fact, Tutten did run a 4.32, if I'm not mistaken, 40-yard dash. So that's quite fast for
that. Tutten I really liked. Tutten is someone who I've read that his tape is really hit or miss. And so I've only watched two games of his at this point, and I really enjoyed both of them. And he reminded me of like a good DeAndre Swift. And so I really need to find why some people are saying that he's hit or miss, because I just haven't seen it yet. And I want to understand because he's so much fun to watch. And that's part of the DeAndre Swift of it, is he's a hit or miss player in the pros.
Yeah, it's unlike the DeAndre Swift, it's actually a guy that, from what I've seen around the mock draft space and whatnot, he's not going to be the sort of guy that costs you a day two pick. Like most places have him going in the early day three. Maybe now with the testing, he's more of a guy that goes into the late day two, but it's still like you're talking about a fourth round pick instead of what DeAndre Swift was, which, if I'm not mistaken, was a second round pick. So,
yeah.
Totally different sort of draft capital for the guys. And yeah, he had solid production, especially in the last year. Although, as we know, like the production usually doesn't translate super well into the pros. But his profile seems like a sort of guy that actually Angelo might like a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tootin.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It is.
And yeah, Omarion Hampton running a 4.46 at over 220 pounds. That's impressive. Quinshon Judkins, too, over 220 pounds, 4.48. Damian Martinez, 4.51, nearing 220 pounds. I thought that he was going to be bigger than 217 or whatever he weighed in at. Because he plays really strong. But the running back class is just going to be so good, and the wide receiver class is going to be so average.
So you're saying there isn't a wrong answer with running back? Is that what you're saying?
I really don't think so. I think that an NFL team could take any of the top five and be really happy, or wait until day three and still find a running back. Like, one of my sleepers this year is going to be Kyle Manungai, which I'm probably going to mess up his name plenty of times.
Okay, I'm terrible with names too, so.
But he is just so much fun to watch. He ran a little slow. He ran a 4.6, but if you watch him on tape, he just does not stop running.
Yeah, and all of this time has passed, and we've barely talked about wide receivers.
Yeah, we
haven't told you all you need to know. Not good this year. It really isn't. I do like both of the TCU wide receivers. One of them is Savion Williams, who
TCU.
Alex is going to hate because he looks exactly like QJ.
Yeah, nobody. I'm legally not allowed to talk about QJ anymore. At least in Corey's presence, by the way. So no shots for me. Like,
well, I just don't think that he's that bad. He's not going to be elite or anything, but he's not going to be that bad.
Thank God they didn't spend a first round pick on him then. Oh wait,
yeah, that was a mistake. But the other TCU wide receiver, actually reminds me a little bit of Ladd McConkey, Jack Bock.
Yeah, I'm seeing him. He is 6'1", if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Did the wide receivers run yet? Because I'm not seeing 40-yard times for any of the wide receivers.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if he ran.
Okay. So let me pull up something here on the Jack Bock. Okay, so he's a white guy, so that's why he said he's similar enough to Ladd McConkey. He also looks, Jesus Christ, similar enough to Ladd McConkey.
he's got solid hands, he's got good routes.
His production is non-existent until 2024, so I can already say that Angelo will hate it, the guts out of him. yep. Hey, Angelo, this guy didn't break 500 yards until 2024.
Oh, Alex.
He's gonna be a bust, isn't it? Isn't that just how this goes?
Alex.
It's like none of the percentiles are good actually for Angelo as well. I can already tell you that Angelo will absolutely hate the guts out of this dude, and I might like him after I watch some tape on Emily. If he's like one of those guys that as you said, great hands, gets into space quickly, is a good slot guy. Those are the type of guys that I would make a football team out of those guys. Why not?
Yeah, you need a place for those types of players. I mean, not everyone can be Julio Jones or Jamar Chase or QJ.
Or Quentin Johnson.
So you need some of those guys. But going back to Savion Williams, like, if you think in your head early career Cordarrelle Patterson, you can certainly see that. Because he plays both running back and wide receiver at 6'4", 222. And he ran a 4.48, I think. Yeah. Which is just incredibly impressive. He has some lapse drops, just like QJ, which is infuriating. But he high points the ball really well, and he's just uber athletic.
Just Christ, I'm not sure which guy you're describing to me right now.
I mean, if QJ had actual production at running back and showed skill at breaking tackles as a running back, that would be Savion.
Yeah, because I was looking at his production. And first, I have to wonder why he went... His career path is TCU, TCU, Tennessee, TCU, TCU. So, like, he just eventually decided that one year he wanted to play at Tennessee. Fuck that, I guess. And then, if you don't like Ladd McConkey 2.0 production, you definitely won't like this guy's production because, hey, Angelo, he never broke 650 yards receiving. And that's in his senior year. That's when he broke the 600-yard barrier, by the way. That's the only time he ever had. And something interesting is that he does have a role in special teams. Special team guys usually sort of translate to some sort of agility, some sort of bust in terms of like burst, not bust, sorry, that came out wrong. But yeah, this guy has just bust written all over him.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's a bust with that.
I can see why you like him. He's going to be a fourth round pick. So
okay.
You're going to get the upside without losing a first round pick on a player who isn't going to be elite.
Okay, so you're going to get the same results as QJ, but it won't cost you as much to cut him.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Eventually, one of those guys will pan out. I will still wait for the day.
So I believe that was the last one that you said was the next QJ. Word for word, you said he was the next QJ.
That could have been a slight misjudgment.
Just a little bit.
But we'll leave it at that. Just a little bit. Just a tiny bit of misjudgment. But I was going to say, I'm still waiting for the first TCU wide receiver to pan out. But I might have to pull a chair.
Yeah, you're not wrong there, buddy.
But like looking at those guys' names and whatnot, and maybe we'll pull this last one out. Since we've been going at this for a bit now. And I'm sure Angelo has to go eventually. I'm kind of certain that, like, I haven't looked a whole lot into it outside of, like, what's the norm for this guy. But I feel like Egbuka is going to be the guy that I really like out of this class. And it's not going to be, like, a sexy pick or, like, a surprising pick. Like, his profile is just the sort of guy that I gravitate towards, I feel like. And as I dive a bit more into his tape...
Oh, boy. You mean the guy who didn't go to the combine? Oh, okay. Boy.
Let's hear it. Put the frustration out, Angelo.
Alex is going to do it again. He's going to bet on these guys who don't go to the combine, and then he's going to be... You know, surprised, shocked when someone who actually ran and actually had confidence in their measurables, you know, beats them out in production. Go ahead. This is this part of the year. It's okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, man.
How similar is this guy to Terry McLaurin?
I think that's actually a good comparison.
I don't even need to watch tape. That's like, this guy screams Terry McLaurin, which I loved. But go on, please.
I think that he runs good routes. His hands are just okay, and that was sort of an issue with Terry McLaurin coming out. He gets open really well. He's a smart player. I think his upside is limited. I don't think he's particularly the most athletic player. He's similar to Ladd McConkey in a way, too.
The fact that he skipped the combine wasn't clue enough.
Yeah, I think that Terry's a good comparison. I think Ladd McConkey's a good comparison. A recent one.
Love him, okay, Egbuka.
Yeah,
Egbuka. Egbuka. Okay, I love the guy. I'm going to draft him everywhere. That's the one guy that I love. Right now, I'm completely sold. I haven't even watched the second of the tape, but when I do, I'm going to love this guy. He just screams that.
I don't see quite the upside with him. I see him as a good wide receiver, too, which is what I thought Matthew Golden was prior to the combine, but I might have to go and revisit that.
Maybe he should skip too.
If Golden skipped, that would have been such a waste running a 4-2-9.
Angelo just saying, guys, skip the combine after he has a good performance. Typical Angelo. Typical Angelo. Yeah. Can't see other people succeed.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That's what happens, Alex, when you're confident and good in your skills. You just skip the combine because why do they need to see that I'm fast? You know, I know I'm fast. Just skip the combine.
But yeah, like, he just seems like my guy. Emeka Ebuka. That's just going to be my guy. Plus, I sort of like Ohio State's wide receivers. Like, everyone.
Yeah, all of them come out pretty good. All of them come out pretty good.
And that's my same sort of tune that I've heard from Lad and I've heard from Terry, is that, like, they're not super great alphas. They're good twos. I mean, I'll live with the good twos. Like, give me those guys. Like, they're dependable. They will catch. Sure, they won't get you the 50-50 balls quite often, but you know what? They also won't bust quite often.
I mean, Jeremiah's the guy will.
Also, the other guys before all ran the combine, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, okay, just wait until Jeremiah Smith comes out, and then he'll ruin that. He'll be incredible.
Okay.
But yeah, the last note on the wide receivers for me is the guy that I can't get over is Jalen Noel from Iowa State. He is fantastic. He plays hard. He's really smart. And at the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it into the first round, which is a bit of a take from what you're seeing in mock drafts right now.
Jalen Noel ran a 4.39 and a nice 41.5-inch vertical. At only 5'10", 194, I believe.
Wow.
So he's not the biggest guy, so he doesn't have the prototypical size, but the speed should be more than good enough. Is it just, what's his route combination? Is his routes any good?
Oh, his routes are excellent. He's a great route runner. He settles well in zone.
Is it good, or is it like QJ good?
It's good. And he runs all... every single route he runs in college too, so he has all the experience that he needs.
So like
he reminds me of like what Christian Kirk is right now, but that's not what Christian Kirk was when he was coming out. Where Kirk is a good route runner, he had good hands, around the same size, good speed, but obviously like Kirk had a down season, so it's not the best comparison, but that's who he looks like when he plays.
Okay. You might have sold me another guy. Because I like that sort of profile.
Well, Alex, as long as he runs rounds. The Eagles or Quinn Johnson?
That's a tough task. But Corey's around, so Eagles. Like, QJ's a nice guy. He's just a chill guy. I'm contractually obliged to not say anything bad about QJ.
Uh-huh.
So, for today's show.
Tune next in for week, next we'll come show. Back, and I won't be here. And then you'll just let it all out. You'll say, I'm just gonna... EJ slapped your mother.
Yeah, for sure. Like, he came to Portugal and he fucking slapped the shit out of her. And that's why I can never forget him. And he still cooks.
That's what I'm waiting to hear, what he did to you. What did he do to you? That's what
the Eagles did to you.
The Eagles, I just think they're an annoying fan base. That's just it at the end of the day. I just don't like those cocky motherfuckers. I was like, they act like they've won like 50 Super Bowls. They're super loud, their fan base. And I'm not even American. I don't even have to deal with the fuckers. But I don't like how they go from like 80 to 80 in like a second. Like, if anything goes slightly wrong, everyone should be fired from the team. Everyone should be thrown to the wolves. But if things are going smoothly, everyone is the best ever. It just seems like the most bipolar franchise ever. But that's just me. As for QJ, I mean, outside of that, sometimes it's just the fact that I'm right. I like sticking it in people's face that I'm right. So that's basically it with QJ. Hey, yes,
but he'll have an over 100-yard game with 2 touchdowns, and you'll still be like, he sucks, he's not good, and he won't drop a pass that week. And then you'll come back the very next week, and he'll drop 100 yards.
See, I told you.
I have to remind you that he is still at his essence, Quentin Johnson. It's like people forget when he has that glimpse of a decent game. And people got all up in arms. Okay, it's happening. It's happening. It's finally happening. Like, Quentin Johnson wheels up, like Angelo used to say. Like, the second that the wheels go up.
I said it this season. What do you mean used
to say? Yeah. Used to say, you're not going to say it anymore, I hope. Like, yeah, I hope you've been proven wrong about that. And so it's like, wheels up for Quentin Johnson. And like, the second that the wheels start to leave the ground slightly, the engine breaks, the flaps go completely off, and it's just, the plane just completely dismounts, and it's back to ground zero for him. And that's the story of Quentin Johnson.
I'll put it this way. He's already better in his second year than Gabe Davis has ever been in his 5 years in the NFL.
Okay, like, that's another guy that I couldn't give a shit about. I'm still waiting.
I mean, like, but like, he's fine. He's not horrible, and he's not gonna win a championship in anything.
Not with the Chargers. Not with the Chargers. But that, like, no one is gonna win that with the Chargers. So
I do really hope, like, one day I can see the day where Quentin Johnson has his, like, 100-yard, 2-touchdown game in, like, the fantasy football finals, and I just get to watch
Alex. Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh, my God. I would never.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Is that when you're, like, falling to the ground? Like, it's sleeping. Oh, my God. I'm awake. you know why that also won't happen? It's like, if you look at our leagues, all of the so-called Quentin Johnson truthers, like the people defending him here that had him, they all grabbed this stinky ass in this past offseason. They grabbed this stinky ass and they sent him to like Guantanamo Bay of fantasy football, which is like to the worst of the worst teams in the league for a measles second round pick. So now he's stuck on the worst rosters in the league. So he's not going to make a fantasy championship anytime soon or so. That won't happen. It's like grabbing Quentin Johnson. Sending it to 2019 Angelo's team in Dynasty Nas. It's like, it's just a cesspool of guys that you can find on practice squads around the league. And it's like, he's starting, I don't know, man, he's starting like the fourth rounder for the fourth stringer for the Tennessee Titans. And then there's Quentin Johnson in there. What's up, guys? So like, how's that guy ever going to make a championship, right? Okay. But I think that's about it, right? Do you have to go, Angelo?
Yeah, probably. It's about time.
Okay. Anything else for having me, Corey?
Nope, I'm on the Jalen Knoll train. Check him out. And okay. Kyle Manungai.
And Ebuka. Ebuka is the best wide receiver in this class, by the way.
God.
I've said it.
I'll leave that for you.
Okay. I'm in that train. Right now.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm gonna log off.
All right, you have
a good one, Corey. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Bye bye.
And that's it, guys. That's the show.
Like, he didn't deserve
Quentin
that.
Johnson 8. A bit of Combine talk. Some news. And I hope you enjoyed the show. Do you have anything else to add, Angelo? Should I sign us off here?
Sign us off, buddy.
Okay. So I have a good one, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show so far. If you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, on the Spotify app, just make sure to leave us a like, subscribe, 5-star review as well. Turn on the auto downloads, which really helps out the show. If you're listening on the YouTube channel, please make sure to like, subscribe, turn on the notifications, all of those good stuff. And as always, guys, talk to you later. Bye.